can I say of the great peak? The ancient dukedoms are everywhere green, inspired and stirred by a breath of creation, with the twin forces, the Champions League and the Premier League, presumably, balancing day and night. I bare my breast toward opening clouds. I strain my sight after birds flying home. When shall I reach the top and hold all mountains in a single glance? Welcome to episode 22 of Cop On Podcast, you delightful little butterfly. We are 57.89473684.21% of the way through the Premier League season, being 22 matches, and Liverpool's mighty hammer needs to be wrenched out of Brighton's head and swished towards Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace Eagles on Saturday. Welcome one, welcome all, wherever you are. First up, going to get right into it today. First up, I was delighted, absolutely thrilled that Nick Philpott from Red and Blue News, that's a Crystal Palace fan page on Facebook, joined me for a conversation previewing Saturday's gargantuan. So, Nick, thank you very much for joining me again. It's absolutely super of you. So happy to have you back. How's Red and Blue News going?
Red and Blue News, thank you for asking, and thank you for having me back on again. Red and Blue News is going from strength to strength. We are now the largest Crystal Palace page by a long Facebook page, and we are the only Crystal Palace page to have a to be live on Facebook and do a like a TV show. We've also just secured ourselves a huge sponsor, which I won't go into details on, but for monetary reasons and for equipment and all the rest of it, it's going to help us massively going forward. So we are delighted with its progress, going from strength to strength. Thank you.
Well, fantastic. Congratulations. That sounds brilliant. And yeah, you never know. Maybe Cop On Podcast might get a sponsor one day. But at the moment, I have to pay for my own material and eat toast to afford it for about a month. But there you go. It's all good fun.
You can tell my heart's bleeding for you, Owen.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. The Palace, you're 14th in the league, if I'm not mistaken. In the last five games, it's been up and down. You drew with Cardiff at home. You lost away to Chelsea. No disgrace there, 1-0. You beat Wolves away. Great result. You qualified in the FA Cup by beating Grimsby at home. But the last time out, unfortunately, you lost against Watford. How's the mood with yourself and amongst the Palace fans?
Well, you've actually missed out one result, OK? And that was prior to all of that. It was the biggest result of the season, of course, so far, has been that we are the only team to have beaten Man City on their own turf. It's the first time we'd secured a result in Manchester on both clubs in 28 years with the Andros Townsend wonder goal, if you remember. But you're quite right. The results have been checkered recently, up and down. I've been to the Grimsby game. I went away to Wolves. They played magnificently away at Wolves and played appallingly at home to the second tier Grimsby Town. You don't know what Palace is going to turn up on the day, unfortunately. And hence why they're finding themselves in this position. It's been a difficult Christmas period. I think overall we'd be quite satisfied with our results over the Christmas period. But it's, we now need to find a couple more decent results and push ourselves up the league.
Yeah, and let's talk about that City match then. That was before the Cardiff game. I mean, absolutely terrific. Going into the game, were you expecting an onslaught? Were you expecting a pummeling from Guardiola's graceful heroes, as the media like to portray them? Or were you, confident of a sneaky win?
No. Our entire team on Red and Blue News were... The average was 4-0 defeat, okay, and one of them even predicted a 6-0 defeat. I thought we might get one goal. I thought we might score a goal, and even that would have been an achievement. But to come away from the Etihad with all 3 points was just outstanding and beyond our wildest dreams. And all of a sudden, then you think, hang on a minute, is our season now going to turn around? We've actually pulled in a decent result against them. And don't forget, Wolves are no mean pushovers either. They're in the top seven of the league, and we went up there and turned them over on their own place. And then we come home and we draw against Cardiff and struggle to get through to the next round of the fourth round of the FA Cup against little Grimsby Town, who, it has to be said, if anybody didn't see the game that day, Grimsby Town, there was a 20,000 near Sellers Park that day, and 6,000 of them were Grimsby fans. They travelled in that, they took over one quarter of the stadium. They were magnificent, the Grimsby Town fans. So big credit to them. But we're through to the next round of the FA Cup as well. So we've got another home tie against a little club called Tottenham Hotspur or something. I don't know who they are, but that's who we're playing. That's who we're playing in the next round of the FA Cup.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be very exciting. Very exciting. But Hodgson, then, I mean, yes, not doing so well at home then. Does that affect people's views of Roy Hodgson? You're still very much behind him as a sort of local lad?
Wonderful question, because that is a perfect question to ask, because there is a little bit of reticence creeping in now. The issue we have with Roy Hodgson as a fan base, and this is not me or my little show that we do, the issue we have with Roy Hodgson is his decision-making process. He's very staid in his ways. Away from home, he's fine. He's playing a 4-5-1. I haven't got any problem with that at all. And we're breaking from midfield and defence and causing those upsets that we've already discussed. But at home, he's playing a strict 4-4-3 system. And he's not allowing the likes of Zaha and Townsend to swap sides. Okay, now, even when we were struggling a couple of seasons ago under Allardyce, the one thing that gave Zaha was the freedom to jump over from the right wing to the left wing and back again. And Townsend would support him and go the other side. The trouble with Palace at the moment is they're a little bit predictable, especially at home. And now the Crystal Palace faithful, some of them are starting to get to the stage where, do you know what? This 72-year-old man now needs to maybe get himself a car rug and go down to Brighton Seafront and sit down there with his wife for a couple of days a week, because they are getting a little bit concerned about something. You know, the trouble is, we've got no succession management at Palace. This is the issue that we really have. You know, I've got no problem with Roy Hodgson and his experience and as a coach and as a trainer. No problem with that whatsoever. But what we don't have in place is succession management. We need somebody younger in the wings to when Roy does bow out, and hopefully he bows out gracefully and Palace will be his last club, he'll move upstairs into the boardroom, maybe a director of football, something like that, after he's bought and nurtured through the next generation coach. Unfortunately, Steve Parish, or our budget, doesn't allow us to do that sort of thing. It'll probably be something you do at Anfield, because you have the facilities to do it and you have the clout to do it. Sadly, at Palace, we do not.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're just going to get Steven Gerrard when Klopp finishes his 7-year contract. I mean, I could feel that one coming. Sticking with Palace and Zaha, who you mentioned there, yes. I don't know. I put him in my fantasy team at the start of the season, and he didn't pick up many points. What's wrong with him? Is it just the fact that he's not swapping the wings, like you say, or is there something? I mean, he's still your danger man, right?
Of course, he's our danger man. He's our talisman. But he is, unfortunately, he's playing, especially at home, he is playing in a system whereby it's a rigid system, not allowing in the flexibility to swap around. And that's purely and simply down to the coaching tactics of the manager. I mean, make no mistake, Palace are making the chances. In our last six games, we have created 106 chances, 106 attempts at goal, and scored, I believe, it's 5 or 6. Not acceptable. Now, that a lot of that is down to the fact that our main threat of a striker, who you know very well and good, of course, Mr. Benteke, has been out long-term injured. And we've been dealing with the likes of a loan from Swansea, Jordan Ayew, who scored his first goal at Molineux, a 2-1 victory at Molineux a couple of weeks ago. And he went on to score the winner against Grimsby Town. But I've just found out in the last hour, I've got some exclusive news for your podcast. Okay,
excellent.
This has not even been announced by Crystal Palace Football Club, and it hasn't been confirmed. So this is how hot off the press it is. It hasn't even been released to the Crystal Palace fan base yet. But the two goalkeepers, our first and second choice goalkeepers, Wayne Hennessy, Welsh international, and Vicente Guaita, both picked up injuries on Saturday. Now, Guaita went off after 43 minutes with what looked like a calf strain, and it appears to be a tear as opposed to a strain, so he's going to be out for some time. Hennessy came on, made a couple of flaps. He was responsible for certainly for the first goal against Watford on Saturday, and he's also got a quad injury. Now, there in itself gives Liverpool the opportunity at the weekend, because all it leaves us with as cover is the very aging Julian Speroni. Okay,
he's now, still around.
He's our third choice goalkeeper. Okay, and the problem with that is, without Speroni, okay, there is nobody else. We do not have any other backup goalkeeper. We don't even have any kids coming through the system. So there is an issue there. So we're about to play the most prolific strike force in the Premier League this season. And what season Liverpool are having, so congratulations to all of you guys up there. But you're not going to have an awful lot of worries on Saturday, because we don't have an experienced goalkeeper. Julian Speroni has, I believe he played in goal against Grimsby Town, but it's the only competitive match he's had all season. And he will be playing on Saturday. As I said, not even announced by the club yet, but you're getting it from me first.
That's incredible. Well, thanks for that exclusive, Nick. That's very, I feel very honoured about that. But when, apart from Grimsby, I mean, did he even play last year, Speroni?
A fairly decent couple last year, and Speroni played in most of the games then. He has been on the fringes quite a lot this season. Hennessy was out for a couple of games a few weeks ago, and Speroni has been on the bench. So he's been there or thereabouts. Okay, they gave him an extension a couple of years ago. They gave him an extension, a 2-year contract, which surprised us all, because we thought he was going to retire then. Okay, but he hasn't, and he didn't. But he will certainly retire at the end of the season. And I would assume he goes into our coaching staff, I would guess. But it's for him to be making his Premier League first appearance this weekend against the title, chances are they're going to be the title-winning champions of Liverpool Football Club. Paul, like, I feel actually quite sorry for him.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that last sentence you said there brings joy to my heart. I mean, it's been such a long time for Liverpool. Do you think we can do it? Do you think we can be champions this year from the outside?
Put it this way, it's Liverpool's to lose. I think we have done you a massive favour taking those 3 points out of the Etihad. We have done well against the higher teams this season, okay? No question about it. Of course, on a selfish point of view, I'm hoping that we're going to do it again this weekend. That's my heart. My head says that we're going to get a spanking, probably 3-0 or 4-0. We certainly helped you on your way to your first Premier League and whatever it is. Oh, it's first Premier League in history, isn't it? Am I right in saying that?
Yes, yeah. I mean, the last time it was the old First Division.
I remember it well. And it's one of those things where I honestly believe that it's Liverpool's to lose. They have got history of maybe not carrying through their promise to the end. If you remember what we commonly call at Selhurst Park, we call it Christambol. Christambol was the season whereby you were winning 3-0 at Selhurst Park, and yes, Dwight Gale pulled it back to 3-3. We call that Christambol, okay?
Well, Suarez was crying at the end. I still cry about it sometimes. I was crying about it in the shower this morning, yeah. Yes, it's terrible memories for us, but yes, it must be joyful for you. So, I mean, yeah, it was a hell of a football match. It was amazing, yeah, absolutely. But, okay, and I don't know, if you were... So presumably he's going to set up with a 4-5-1, as you mentioned. That's what you expect from Hodgson this weekend. And do you have any particular weaknesses that Liverpool can exploit, apart from the 39-year-old, I've just Googled it, goalkeeper Speroni?
There you go. I'm going to give you a possibility of one that you may well be aware of and you will be very familiar with. The other bit of exclusive news that hasn't been announced by the club, although it's only just come out on Snapchat in the last few minutes before we came on air, was our loan signing from Swansea, Jordan Ayew, is sitting on the treatment bench as we speak with his foot in plaster, and he's the only one that scored goals for us in the last couple of games. So that would leave a returning Christian Benteke. Now, those cynics a bit amongst us could look at that two ways. This could be the returning Christian Benteke, who had, last season for Palace, couldn't hit a barn door with a banjo, okay? Or it could be that he comes on and spoils the party at Anfield and affects the destination of the Premier League. He could, you know, and it depends on what service he gets. Under the 4-5-1 system, we're getting lots of balls into the box, and that's what he needs. And that's what he needs. If he can get the service, the relevant service, Christian Benteke could be a threat to you, but also he could be a weakness as well to us, okay, because he's completely without match fitness, although he did come on, I think he came on in the 55th minute on Saturday, so at least he's had some time on the pitch. And in fairness to Benteke, and I'm not his biggest fan, in fairness to Benteke, he came on and he made a bloody nuisance of himself. He was really putting himself about on Saturday, and he was unlucky a couple of times not to score.
Well, that's I mean, you know, I remember as well Benteke scoring a couple of goals against Liverpool at Anfield a couple of years ago, right? Two seasons ago, was it? I think Palace managed to scrape a 2-1 win or something that day. I can't remember exactly, but yes.
I'll give you another example in reverse. I also remember Christian Benteke tripping over his own feet in the box at Selhurst Park and winning a penalty for which Liverpool went on to win a game a couple of seasons ago at Selhurst Park, which I've never forgiven for anyway. So,
well, yeah, sounds about right for that guy. But, well, thank you very much, Nick. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. This last 15 minutes has been very illuminating. Thank you very, very much again. So prediction then, you think 3 or 4-0 in?
Yeah, I think Liverpool will win the game and probably win the game quite comfortably. I would be surprised if we didn't score. And Zaha's been on a bit of a goal drought recently. So I would go, my prediction for this weekend will be 3-1 Liverpool.
3-1, says Nick Philpott from Red and Blue News. That would certainly put the cherry on our tart, wouldn't it, Reds fans? Absolutely brilliant of Nick to join us and give us his thoughts on the Palace there. Thank you to him. This is Cop On Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Cop On Podcast. You can support us on patreon.com/Cop On Podcast or send us your hate, unfiltered hate, to coponpodcast@gmail.com. Next up, we've got Darren Wilde. I'm delighted to say Darren is back with us. And we're going to talk about the Brighton match and lots of other things. Do hope you enjoy, as ever. Thank you so much for listening. You, the lovely listener.
Let's get into that. Let's start with Brighton. I mean, John Aldridge summed it up absolutely beautifully on Twitter. He said this was a proper, dirty, horrible, ugly win. And that's exactly what it was. My favourite kind of win, in fact. It was our fifth 1-0 of the season. Mo Salah has scored the goal in 4 of those 1-0 wins. And the other one, of course, was the mighty Divock Origi. Coming into that match, obviously we'd lost the previous one against Manchester City. Were you nervous at all, Darren? Were you keeping it together before the match? How did you feel before Brighton?
I was nervous. I mean, I did think that we would have a nervy win. I mean, I did think we would win, but a nervy one, and I think it played out that way. You know, the fact that we got our goal and through a penalty, and you know, they all count as one, don't they? So I mean, I think that getting the 3 points was the most important thing, regardless of how we played. But I thought we seemed to play better than Brighton. I think last year we probably would have drawn that game, if not lost it. So I think that you know, we have improved, and I was nervous, but confident we would probably win it.
You're absolutely, I mean, you called it absolutely marvellously, didn't you, before in our preview before the match, by saying it would be a close match, and indeed it was. But you know, I'm so glad we avoided defeat. There is that stat going around that we haven't lost back-to-back Premier League games for 40 months, which is actually going back to September 2015. We lost to West Ham 3-0 at Anfield. Oof. And then Manchester United, we lost at Old Trafford 3-1 when Benteke did an overhead kick. So it means that Jurgen Klopp has never lost back-to-back Premier League games, which is an incredible record, isn't it? I mean, that's something that I've looked at other teams with envy, the fact that they bounce back. United were experts at it under Ferguson, for example, and it just seems like we've got it now. We've got this mentality, this mental strength going through the team. It can't be just luck, that record after 40 months. There must be doing something right. And I don't know, would you agree that it's all about mental strength?
Absolutely. I think it is about mental strength. I think, you know, Jurgen Klopp's been in the position before in the Bundesliga. So, I mean, he knows what to do in those situations, you know, being top and under pressure. I think, you know, we've got a good blend of experience and youthfulness in the team. You know, they are generally all, you know, our first team, you know, generally all kind of, you know, first team internationals. And so have that experience and have been at other clubs, you know, where they and in the Premier League, you know, if not with other international teams. And so I think, you know, I think we have got a good blend of youth and experience, even though it's a very young team, you know, overall. And I think that you know, comes with the added benefit that, you know, when we are under pressure this year, we do seem to be holding on and grinding them out, because there has been a few games where we've nicked a win, where last season again we would have either drawn it or lost it. I mean, the Keita crossfield ball that you know, in the last few minutes, that got put out and almost cost us. You know, I think that on another day, in another season, you know, that would have drawn Brighton level, and we'd have dropped a couple of points. So yeah, so, you know, good.
You're absolutely right, and that's the thing that really pleased me. I mean, talking about the action of the game itself, I mean, it really pleased me. It was just lots of, that was Wijnaldum who stopped their counter-attack in the last minute after Keita played that silly pass to Origi. You know, it wasn't just Wijnaldum who saved us. It was Trent had a little flick, Fabinho, magic tackle that's, you know, saved a goal. And it's that kind of resilience and last-ditch defending and concentration that we've really shown, you know, such great improvement since, for example, Virgil van Dijk joined the team. We'll talk a bit more about him later. I just want to concentrate on the game itself, really. I mean, 5-1-0s this season. This one, I mean, the first half finished 0-0, and it was as stale as a politician's platitude, I found. It was just absolutely turgid, horrible. I loved it. I mean, I loved this kind of game. Although we needed some kind of, you know, magic dust in the second half, but they were always likely to tire, and we could open them up a little bit. But they were, I thought they were very good, Brighton. They were extremely organised, a 4-5-1 formation, very compact, defensive. It was difficult for us. But the positives, of course, let's start with the main man, Mo Salah, dancing around the box and winning a penalty. It was a penalty again, wasn't it, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, it was more of a penalty than perhaps the other two that have been under dispute in recent weeks. I mean, you can clearly see. I mean, to be fair, when I first saw it, it didn't look. It looked a bit cheap, you know, but then when you see it from over his shoulder, and you know, you're looking at the back of the Brighton defender, you can see clearly the tug on the shirt arm. which sets him off balance. And so I think that, you know, for me, it was a penalty. I think that the commentators at the time called it a penalty, match of the day, said it was a penalty. And, you know, I'm not sure any of the pundits have questioned whether it was definitely a penalty or not. You know, they may have said that it might have been soft, but, a soft penalty is a penalty, isn't it?
I think I would say so. I would say so. And we've missed a lot of those calls over the past couple of years. So it's good to see that we're finally getting them. But Mo Salah is the kind of player who's got, you know, he's got magic in his boots, but he's also, you know, he's tough. He's a tough cookie, as they say. I mean, he's the whole box of cookies. He's just got such intelligence, speed of thought, speed of movement. And he's the Premier League's equal joint top scorer on 14 goals with Kane and Aubameyang. How do you think he compares to them in terms of style and what he brings to us compared to what Aubameyang brings Arsenal or that Kane brings Tottenham?
Well, I mean, he's got better passing stats than either Kane, you know, or Aubameyang, and you know he has played, you know, as many games, you know, so I think it's fair to be able to compare them. You know, I think that he is not quite as prolific as Harry Kane in terms of his aerial challenges, you know, and so he's kind of more of a get the ball on the ground and get the ball away type of player. But I think that, you know, he's scoring the goals. I think he rates, you know, better than Aubameyang in terms of his stats. So I think, you know, overall, you know, you'd want Salah in your team as opposed to the other two. Now, you know, if you were going to throw Eden Hazard into the mix, then, you know, you've got a more of a, you know, a more difficult question then, because they are, you know, they are very comparable. And, you know, while Hazard's passing ability is, you know, far superior, his goals, he's not scoring as many goals. This, you know, in comparison. So, you know, it's a difficult one to balance, I think.
Yeah, Hazard, I think he's got something like 10 goals and 10 assists.
Yeah.
Compared to Salah, was it 14 goals and 7 assists? 7 assists, or something?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're both, you know, amazing players. But, maybe Hazard's playing for a different thing this season. He's maybe, we've been saying this for years, but maybe playing for a move away. I think it finally might happen this summer. And, I mean, I love to see Eden Hazard play in the Premier League. He's really lit it up, but I hate it when he plays against us. He always scores. He always has a great game.
And I saw a report that United were interested in him. And that would be unfortunate if he went to another Premier League team. You know, I think if he's going to go, I think I'd like him to go to Spain.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you would think he would after. Well, I suppose loyalty is gone in football in a lot of footballers' heads. But you know, after so many years at Chelsea, you would think he wouldn't join them for a rival. But then I heard on the Gutter Show, the excellent The Anfield Rap, Rob Gutman talking about a rumour of Coutinho to Man United.
Yeah,
so I don't
know. That too. Yeah.
Silly season. That's what they call it, isn't it? This is batshit crazy season. This is complete. This is bananas season. I don't know what it is. But yes, Mo Salah, I mean, he's just incredible, isn't he? What a great performance again. He missed that chance. It was a very difficult chance. Was fired at his left foot and he almost got it in. I think people have been saying that's a worse miss than it actually was, I think. But yeah. Mo Salah obviously is crucial to us. But the other player I would like to talk about is Big Virgil. I mean, it's a bit of a bit of an odd question, I suppose, because they're both extremely important and we're just so happy that they're both Reds. But if you had to choose, you know, I wouldn't say a gun to your head, that's too serious, but if someone put a haddock in front of your face and would slap you if you didn't make the decision, then if you had to make a decision, who is more important to us, Mo or Virgil?
I've kind of said this before. I would take Virgil van Dijk over Mo Salah. Unfortunately for Mo, I think he would have to move on and find another club. It's not that I don't want him, of course, and you know, it's difficult choosing between your two favourite children. I would take van Dijk. I think, and the reason why is because, you know, we've got goals throughout the team, and I think that we've always, as a club, found goal scorers, whether it's Suarez, Fowler, Owen, you know, and even, you know, from midfield, you know, with Gerrard, and I think that we're able to find and attract goal scorers. The challenge for us has been, you know, to have. And I think the challenge for a lot of teams is to have a steady, solid centre half. You know, and I think that getting Virgil van Dijk and somebody of his quality, you know, it's not the kind of player that comes along, you know, that often. And so I think he's made such a difference to our season in terms of resilience and our ability to convert those draws into victories and those shaded losses again into victories. You know, I think I just don't think we would be the same team this season without him.
Virgil van Dijk, the Dutch monster, our colossus. It was his 50th match for Liverpool, and in that time we've kept 24 clean sheets, which is unbelievable. We've had 33 wins, and so have Andy Robertson and Trent, but 33 wins out of 50, pretty damn good. His pass success is the best in the club, 88.64% in that time, and he's also the top at duels, clearances, interceptions and blocks. And the last fact I have about him was that he was a big part of us going 918 consecutive minutes at Anfield without conceding a single goal. Basically, he's humongous. I mean, would I choose him or Salah? I still think Salah is underrated. I still think he's up there with the best players I've ever seen play for Liverpool, but so is Virgil. But if there was a haddock wafted in front of my face with a threat of a slap if I don't make a decision, yeah, I'll probably go with you, Darren, because I love clean sheets and I love horrible defensive wins like against Brighton. So yeah, well, let's keep Virgil. Another great defender, Andy Robertson, another great performance by him. For me, he's the best in the world. His qualities are numerous. He barely makes a mistake these days. My question, can he go on forever this season? I mean, it's not impossible to play a whole season. Jordi Alba does it. Think for Barcelona at an incredibly high standard. Can he do it, Darren? I mean, are you worried about injury? Can you rest him? If so, are you resting him for who?
Yeah, I think that because he's not the kind of player who has to get involved in any crunching tackles, we'll be protected from some of those kind of impact injuries that defenders tend to pick up. And so I think because he is such a fine specimen of a man, then and an athlete, I think that he should last. And he has been rested. You know, he has been rested a little. I think he's had some opportunities. And the fact that we're out of the FA Cup, we're out of the Carabao Cup, and I think there'll be less games for him to play overall. So I think I'm pretty confident he'll be able to score all season.
That's a very good point, yeah, about the lack of impact injury. Yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, I just worry about his muscles. Apparently, he's played 91% of all of Liverpool's minutes this season. So, yes, he's had a little bit of rest. But, yes, I mean, fingers crossed, let's just say. A guy who played in defence, Fabinho, at centre-back, his second game after Wolves, after Wolves was the Brighton game at centre-back. I thought he did brilliantly. You know, he showed his amazing qualities, his calmness on the ball, his versatility, his vision. And when Brighton is sitting back so deep, it's great to have another person who can switch the play with long diagonals, who can play, you know, zippy passes through the lines. I thought he was superb. I think did you say that you've had a look at him in comparison with other centre backs for us? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at him in comparison to you know, to Lovren, for example. You know, and you know, Lovren still kind of has a you know, has a better passing ability, you know, in comparison. I think you know, passing percentage for Fabinho is 83%, and Lovren's is 86%. You know, so you know, you wouldn't think that from playing out from the back was Lovren's strength, but you know, he has a, you know, and he's only slightly less than Virgil van Dijk, who's 89%, well, nearer 90% in terms of passing percentage. And you know, Lovren's better in the air at winning. You know, his aerial duels won is higher than Fabinho's overall. And so, you know, I think whether that's a sign of Lovren's experience, you know, in that position, you know, or you know, Fabinho having other strengths. I mean, he's a you know, better offensive player. You know, key dribbles and you know, and getting assists. You know, but I think that he played remarkably well against Brighton. You know, he won 4 out of 4 of his aerial duels, you know, against Brighton, and I think overall, you know, showed that he is a capable understudy, and I think that. You know, if we, you know, we're struggling in the defensive area, I think he slots in nicely because he is more of a defensive midfielder than an attacking midfielder. And so I think his natural game is to protect the back four. So I think that, you know, sitting further back would suit him.
It's great to have that, isn't it? It's great to have that versatility. Yeah, it'd be super if we could get maybe a left-sided a person who could play left wing and left back. You know, that's why I was pre-season that, you know, someone like Ryan Sessegnon, even though he hasn't set the Premier League alight as much as I thought he would, but you know, someone of that profile, it gives it, you know, yes, exactly, it shows the benefit of versatility in the squad where you don't have the resources of Man City, for example. But anyway, OK, so, you know, the next match, Crystal Palace on Saturday, we're going to have this now. I mean, we have these two sirens calling us from the rucks of, you know, the sirens being one for the Premier League, one for the Champions League. But there's a lot of space between the games now. How can you possibly handle it? How are you handling it? Because for me, I find it's just, you know, when I look forward to Crystal Palace, it's like, it just seems like a gargantuan match again. How can I be calm, Darren? How can I keep my head on?
Well, I mean, we've done well against Crystal Palace. I mean, we've had notable exceptions. I think in the in the season of the Gerrard slip, I think that last game, but I think we, you know, we should beat Crystal Palace. I mean, they've not got a great home record, I don't think, and you know, Liverpool are the bookies' favourite to win, I think, and the fans' favourite to win. I mean, I play Sky Sports Super 6, and Liverpool are 95% likely to win, according to, you know, other score predictors. So, you know, and we're 6-1 to beat them 3-0. So I think we should be okay. I'm not too nervous. I think getting Brighton out of the way and having a kind of that monkey off our back, you know, means we can go into the next game, you know, on the back of a winning streak of one.
Well, how did Sky Super 6, what did it say about Manchester City at the Etihad playing Crystal Palace? I'm sure it would have been about 99%. And that's the thing about football. I mean, they played that game 100 times. City would win 99 times. Palace won. Yeah. And it was the one. It was the one just before Christmas. And it was an incredible Christmas present for us. But maybe that will play to our advantage, the fact that City have already slipped on that banana skin. So there is no chance of complacency. But one thing I like about Klopp, though, is that he seems to have this anti-complacency thing where he's on it, and he talks about it in pretty much every press conference, how he wants us to fight, he wants us to stop at, you know, taking games lightly as we may have done in the past. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, again, you know, he has the experience. You know, he has the experience of leading from the front. You know, with a team who would be unlikely league winners, and so I think that he knows. It's a common cliche, isn't it? One game at a time. But I think that he knows enough about his time as a manager to keep the team level-headed and know that, you know, we've just got to rack up the points. So I think that, you know, he's not complacent, and he knows that, he can't be complacent. He knows how good City are as a team. And so I think, you know, anybody who looks at our position and thinks that we are still 100% likely to win the league is kidding themselves, because, you know, as City have shown in December, a couple of losses and things flip, and that's why that's why I think he'll be drilling that home to the squad.
Yeah, I think you're right. Finally, then, Darren, what's a score prediction? You convinced me this is going to be easy. 3-0, 4-0. What do you think?
I think they will score. I do think they'll score. I think our defence, whilst it is slightly under strength, we may concede, but I think we will again have too much firepower for them, and we'll win 3-1. I think just to pick up on your point on the Man City game, you know, don't forget there was two worldies of goals in that particular game. Townsend, and I can't remember who scored their first goal, but again, they were two absolutely special goals, and Crystal Palace are unlikely to score two like that again this season.
Thank you so much to Darren there. Absolutely lovely that he joined us again for episode 22 of Cop On Podcast. This is pretty much the end. Thanks to Tu Fu, the 8th century Chinese poet who gave us the opening lines. You may have noticed I added a little bit about the Champions League and the Premier League, but I'm sure that's what he meant when he was talking about the peak, the great peak. I'm going to try and keep myself together at least until Saturday kickoff, and then I'm going to be just a bundle of energy and nervousness. Liverpool, we're still top of the league. We're still 4 points clear. That's terrific, isn't it? Thank you